This is the August 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's get started with our usual question, and I think I'll begin with you, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. What's on your list of items that we should discuss this week?
I think after, you know, a week after the big production estimates, you know, with the 175 yield and 48.9 on beans, I'd probably want to talk a little bit about what everyone's take is on where we go from here. Are we too high? Are we too low? What the potential is there? And then just, it's interesting to see with the revised demand projections that the carryouts, while they're big, they're not near as big as what they could have been. So I want to talk about the demand structure a little bit as well.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities?
Well, maybe what's going on in the marketplace, just to follow Matt there a little bit, I think there's a lot of moving parts taking place and going to create some good ups and downs here over the next, 6 to 8 months probably, Todd.
Man, Dwayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
I think Kurt hit on something. There's other moving pieces along the way. And, you know, what's the dollar going to do? And will we see an interest rate raise this year? And what effect will that have on the commodities, possibly? But, I mean, basically, are our export sales going to keep up the rate that we've seen as the last couple of weeks?
Let's start, Matt, with you. You've traveled this week just a bit from one side of the Corn Belt to the other. Tell me about what you explored and saw in Ohio and, I think, was it South Dakota?
Yeah, you know, I started out in Ohio, flew into Dayton and went north of Dayton about an hour, hour and a half, and you know, a lot of the producers we talked to in that part of the state were talking about, some fairly large production cuts. Talked to producers who'd said they'd had maybe 2 to 2.5 inches of rain since they planted corn. Weren't going to have anything close to the IPH if they even got 100. So some of those guys were pretty upset. I think there's a fairly large area in northwestern and north central Ohio. Parts of Ohio just haven't gotten enough rain for the corn crop yet. They caught enough rain in time to kind of save the bean crop, if you will. And I think they feel a whole lot better, relatively speaking, about the bean crop. And we went, went to Mitchell, South Dakota. They've got a Dakota Fest going on right now. And spoke last night, spent the whole day there at the show, and talked to a lot of producers. And you get west of Sioux Falls, and it gets awfully variable. A lot of these guys haven't gotten much rain at all. And once again, the corn crop is a whole lot more affected than with the bean crop whenever you get to talking to guys. Yeah, there's a few that haven't gotten enough to even have much of a bean crop, but there's a whole lot more folks talking about, you know, just simply not being able to harvest a whole lot on corn. Talked to some guys that chop silage, and it was adjusted under 50 bushel an acre. So, you know, there is some challenges in those two states. Those are probably two of the worst states as far as some of them that produce a fair amount of corn now.
And they're not small states in particular. I think probably numbers 6 and 7 or 5, 6, and 7, somewhere in that range in corn production. They can have an impact, but really it's 1, 2, 3, and 4 along with 5 that really make the difference. And those are in order: Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana. Of those, USDA Kurt Kimmel pegged Iowa's crop this year at a record setter, 19 bushels better than they have ever been. And I think Minnesota, if I remember the number correctly, was 28, but was in that range. Those two states, numbers 1 and 4, have an awful lot of bushels. Can they manage that big a crop?
Well, it's going to be a big crop. Whether it's up to the report's expectations or not, we'll see. But as Matt hit it on, there's some areas that's going to struggle-wise. There's some agronomists out there that really don't agree. So, you know, it's going to create some market activity as we move down the road. But that's the thing. You talk to elevator guys. They say crop's going to be big. Where are we going to store it? Producers are not, you know, sold up on new crop like they should be. I was at a meeting with Paul Cooley over in Vermilion County earlier this week, and I believe Roger from Premier Co-op was the cash grain guy, and I said they've only priced, farmers only priced about 10% of the new corn and 23% of the new beans. So that's probably going to be more of an issue other than just how big the crop is. But the thing is, what we've seen is, I want to steal Wayne's thunder here, or his question, his concern is, we've seen just huge, huge amount of export business come forward here. And this has been going on for some time. This Gulf basis has been on fire. Here in Illinois, we've had the opportunity to visit with some grain elevator people, and, you know, a situation where they've always gone ethanol or rail, but this river bids been fairly attractive, and we've accumulated quite a bit of export business, and there's some companies out there promoting the idea that we're going to see one of the largest export movement through this fall into this winter. And there's a lot of boats starting to line up. It's kind of like flies on you-know-what there. All of a sudden, we've got these boats, and these world grain exporters are wanting to ship grain and get the boats to where they need to be. It's one of those situations where most of the demand could be front-loaded here as we move into this winter.
Yeah, why is that the case, Wayne Nelson, do you think? We want to talk a bit about demand. Is it simply that the South American harvest was so poor and it really finally has come to roost in the United States in the form of exports?
That's basically it in a nutshell, Todd. You know, as we're talking here and talked to a lot of the exporters here today along the way, they said that basically we're 50 cents cheaper than the rest of the world on corn, and we're the most reliable and the best quality as it is out there. Anyhow, even if they don't like to buy it from us, we're cheaper and we're better quality. So they're lining up to buy it. We've noticed the basis levels on the river have come in probably 20 to 30 cents on basis levels for fall corn, especially down the Memphis area. With Milo basis has come in 25 cents this week. They're really trying to accumulate stuff. And they are actually even on beans, I think they're only like, they're still like 35 or 40 over for some, you know, fall beans that way. So, and they're calling the farmers. They are not sitting back just saying, we'll put this up and put it on a website. They're actively calling them, trying to get some. The farmers are going to be very hesitant sellers at these prices. And they want to get some on the books because, like they say, they got those boats there, and boat demurrage is quite expensive.
Yeah, well, given all of that, farmers are not going to want to sell at these kinds of prices. December corn at $3.42, the September for the lead option at $3.32, well off the highs that we were in just in June and July. And producers still looking at a big crop. We sound, at least in this program, much more as if this can be put away, can be used, but still a really low price. So who's going to wait out which end? The boats are there. And will they really have to bid up in the cash market for it? And will that lead prices higher, do you think, Matt Bennett?
You know, I think that obviously, as these guys are alluding to, basis has been pretty good. And so we've been talking to producers that, as everyone knows, there's still a fair amount of old corn out there. You know, everyone's going to get cleaned out, especially in this part of the world. We're going to have some storage. And so, you know, I think that it's kind of a game of chicken at this point, who's going to break first. And I think, you know, the producer is going to have to come with stuff that's on the farm to make room, in my opinion. And so I've been trying to tell producers, hey, go ahead and move some of this here before we get too far in harvest, because, you know, let's face it, the way this weather's been, there's going to be people probably picking corn once Labor Day's over, and things could change a fair amount then. But I do think the producer is going to have to step up and sell some of this and get rid of their old corn. You know, the thing about it is, I think a lot of guys will be very hesitant. It's going to be tough to sell at prices at this level, you know, like as far as the new corn goes. The bottom line is, I think that cash is not what it has been in the last couple, 3 years. So you know, producer that needs cash this fall, which I think there'll be more than what there was last year, they need to keep in mind this basis isn't going to stay around forever.
Hey, Matt, I just don't know that farmers will do it. I think they'll leave their bins full and they'll put it in commercial storage and they'll wait it out. How big of a problem is that?
Yeah, the only problem I see with that is a lot of producers are telling me when you look at the corn situation, especially, you know, it's dependent upon the farm, but anyone who has much as far as input costs go or higher input farms, you know, you definitely can't turn a profit at this price level. We've talked to guys that think that they could have 230 to 250 on yields, and due to their input structure, can't turn a profit. And so, you know, I'm not so sure that I want to put everything in commercial storage and pay, you know, 20 to 25 cents to get out to Jan 1. So, you know, maybe they will, maybe they won't, but a lot of the producers I've talked to have said, you know, they've been considering maybe selling some of this corn and then re-owning with a strategy that is going to be cheaper than the cost of storage, because call strategies are still pretty darn cheap.
I mean, is that the option that they really have, is to do something where they re-own the corn so that they have some cash flow, or able to pay for their inputs for next year, and the bills they have left over from this year?
I think the cash flow deal is a big deal, yes.
So they use options to make sales and then repurchase the corn?
If you put it in storage, you pay in storage, and there's no guarantee the market's going to rally. If you sell the corn and you buy a strategy for less than the cost of storage, you know, if the market goes down, it's not near as much skin off your back as if that corn was in storage.
Yeah, so the option, is that your suggestion, though, Matt?
I think for producers who need cash this fall, by all means, I certainly don't want to wait until the thick of harvest.
I think you got to use strength in here to make some catch-up sales to generate some cash flow, but the overall strategy continues to preserve working capital. When you look at the long-term chart on corn, you know, the September, the lead contract, we moved close to $3 here late last week on the crop report. D's got down close to 322, so we feel as corn moves closer to $3 on the board, it's undervalued. And in order to stay in the game here, to recoup something back to the upside, I agree with Matt, you know, you move some cash grain, replace ownership on a managed position. Now, I'm not recommending to store corn and hang on. We're optimistic. I think the strategy in here is to have some type of re-ownership for a seasonal up into December. Because what we're going to run into, I think, is there's going to be a large group out there want to stack on the ground and hang on to it, and that's going to create sort of the so-called second harvest or some selling pressure after the first of the year. Because over history, it's awful hard to get a guy to empty a bin once he fills it up this fall, or turn around and sell once he pays that minimum storage. So that's going to create some cash grain movement after the first of the year. You even look at the cash bids at your local elevator. The bid is stronger into December and starts tapering off right after the first of the year. We feel the demand's front-loaded here. We could see demand continue through feed use or the ethanol side of the equation, but this export lineup's strong. It's serious. Cash guys are nervous about getting some coverage on. They just don't have the coverage on at the present time. They haven't stepped up and, you know, extremely been real aggressive. But at some point in time in here, they're going to have to get bought what they needed, because these boats are going to have to get filled up. They're going to have to make the trip to Asia. Then they're going to have to make the trip to the Southern Hemisphere by the first part of March to start hauling out South American beans.
And I suppose that's the point. Whether there's a second harvest or not, that could drop prices, meaning we have a whole bunch in storage that really just needs to be moved, that's setting on the ground. The other item, which is essentially the same point, I think, Kurt, that you're telling me, is that demand is front-loaded, and by the time we get to that point, we won't have the demand structure to lift the prices once we get into the doldrums of the wintertime. Are those the two points you're working with today?
That's correct, but I don't think we're going to go down and make new lows into February or be extremely bearish, because there's still going to be some demand there. It's just that you know, we're going to have big crop, and it's going to keep a lid on the market, whereas big demand is going to continue to provide support as the end user gathers some coverage.
Any clarification on your point, Matt Bennett? I didn't want to walk you into a corner, so I want to make sure you've got the structure of how you think producers ought to attack the corn market correctly.
Well, I think that, you know, if I was a producer that had a lot of storage on the farm, I would be filling every grain bin that I could. I do think that there, you know, there's getting to be a fair amount of carry in the market, you know. Let's see, from Dease to, you know, to the July, you know, you worked up to 23, 24 cents. We've been up about 25 lately. And I think, you know, if we work into 30 at some point on any sort of rally, I'd be selling the carry in the market and then waiting to see what the basis might do. Now, basis is good today, but I think whenever your combines are going across the field October 1st, I don't think basis is going to be what it is today. And so there will be some benefit there. And I think every time the basis improves, a person looks for the basis to help them out, obviously act as if they're the grain elevator. And so I would be filling my bins, but I don't want to pay commercial storage. I don't think there's enough skin on the bone to do that, in my opinion. And so on the other bushels, by all means, especially if you need cash, I would be selling some corn and re-owning it with something that's cheaper than the cost of storage, because I think that it puts you in a better situation than paying for stored corn that, you know, you might end up losing on the futures as well.
Wayne Nelson, your thoughts here. You've been listening patiently to this discussion. Of course, there are a whole lot of moving parts to deal with.
Well, you know, over in our area, we're basically hauled out of corn and beans both. So we have empty storage. We don't have to worry about trying to push out. You know, there's guys got 2,000-3,000 bushels left in the bottom of bins, but it's not a big deal. We should be taking advantage of this, and I think we want to be watching if there's any early harvest bids or anything along the way, is to try to move what we don't have room for. I agree. I don't want to really pay commercial storage this year. I don't think it's a good idea. And as far as putting it in DPing it or whatever that way, that still frees it up and doesn't tighten the basis up. So I think we want to, you know, do what they're talking about. You know, another thing we got to think about is the second harvest they talked about. It's not just us. Argentina is talking about increasing their corn acres 25% for next year because of the way of their tariffs that ended and whatever that along the way. So they're going to come back in with a vengeance come spring with their corn crop too. So I'm a little bit along moving it, as Kurt was talking about, look at moving a lot of it before the first of the year, or at least a lock and take advantage of when it's rallied, then to lock in the carry for later in the year.
Tell me a bit more about the export demand, Wayne, as you see it for corn, and then you can transition into soybeans if you'd like.
Well, the corn market, I think right now, of course, we don't have a lot of competition. We're seeing a little bit of Milo move into China, I think, right now and going along. But we just don't have any competition out there right now, and it's time for us to definitely take advantage of that. You know, Russia will be coming on a little bit later, but with ours right now, we've got it going. We need to, you know, get as much shipped out of this country as we can, because we're going to have huge supplies. I mean, Elwin Taylor's still talking to 173. The government's talking 175. We've got a lot of corn out west, as Matt said, yet to move. So it's time to move a lot of corn on out now. But I do think we're going to have some better chances right now, and we're probably going to get up in that 350 to 370 range maybe before the year's out.
Matt, we have discussed in years past the amount of storage and more than likely the number of years of corn crop that producers in Minnesota and the Dakotas and parts of Iowa might have in storage. What kind of problems does that create? And then can you also talk a bit about the demand structure and how USDA revised it?
Well, you know, I think whenever you look at some of the producers, like, for instance, in South Dakota, you know, they said obviously their crop's not near as good, especially in the areas I was talking about. But they said they're not hopeful that the basis is going to improve a whole lot for them, because there's still a fair amount of old corn. So it's kind of a bad situation that they're in there. You know, it was interesting to me to see, obviously, you go up on exports, you go up on corn usage for ethanol, and you know, are they fairly aggressive in some of their demand? I don't know. I don't know if I would say they're too aggressive. I think that we've seen this export situation turn around dramatically, because a year ago, you know, most people were saying we're not going to be able to export as much corn as even what the USDA is projecting, which was significantly lower than where we ended up this year. And so, in my opinion, yeah, we've cheapened the price of corn up over the last couple months. last winter, I thought that we spurred a lot of demand with cheap corn prices, and then I think we're just reinforcing that at this point. So I think usage is going to stay pretty darn strong.
Let's turn our attention to the soybean market at this time. Kurt Kimmel, how do you assess the size of the crop? Unlike corn, where I think people believe that maybe we've seen the highest number we'll get from USDA, soybeans are a different story. They're an August crop, and it's been awfully good across a good portion of the Midwest.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, if they're gauging by the good to excellent category, it's, it's good, but, there's talk that beans are too high, they might not put pods on. Sudden deaths showing up quite a bit, throughout the Midwest. So we'll see. But gosh darn, August rains is got to be constructive, for bean production. So we'll see how this unplays here as we move forward. But technical picture looks pretty good in the beans. If you look at the daily price chart, we have a head and shoulders in the working here. It projects these November beans could maybe run on up to this 1045 area or so. If you look at the longer term charts, the weekly and monthly price charts are showing some constructive formations there. So we could be caught between a positive technical picture than maybe a little bigger fundamental production number here as we move forward.
Wayne Nelson, as we look at the fundamentals behind the move in the soybeans, part of it is the export market, part of it probably problems in palm oil in Indonesia in particular as it's related to El Nino. How long will the draft on that part of the supply increase needed from bean oil for vegetable oil use in the world be in the marketplace, do you suppose?
I think it'll be played out in probably the next 30 days, Todd. I think that we're looking at, increases going on and looking that way, and I think we'll probably be seeing a very good bean harvest as we look at things. The thing that we're going to be watching right close in the nearby term is how these reserve auctions are going to be going in China and see what they really sell. They're going to be quitting those in October, and they're still restocking very hard. They're hanging in there. How long will they hang in there, and how many more beans will they buy for this fall? I mean, we are, like I said, we're the supermarket that the shelves are full, and if they want things for a while, it's going to be from us. But how much more is China, and when will they start backing off is what they do. If they stay aggressive, like I say, but I'm a lot like Kurt. I like the numbers he was throwing out there, and I think somewhere above this 1050 mark that for the guys that haven't sold much, it's going to be another opportunity to maybe book a few more beans.
Matt Bennett on soybeans?
Yeah, I think whenever I look at the bean crop, as far as relative to corn, I've just had a lot of folks that have told me, hey, if I get good August weather, I'm going to have an awfully good bean crop. Some people are saying it'd be the best bean crop they've ever seen. Several of the agronomists that I talk to have talked in that same fashion. And so, whenever I talk to my producers, I say, I'm not so sure. A lot of you feel that good about your income levels on corn, and so we need to make sure, if nothing else, we protect as much of this bean profit as what we can. And so, I'm okay with letting this ride a little bit, but I sure want to have a floor in place just in case. Because, we'd all like to see beans go back up 75 cents to a buck, but I don't know that any of us have the stomach to see it go the other way. And I'm not saying that it should, but I don't think too many of us were predicted with a 48.9 yield that we were going to end up rallying 40, 50 cents off the lows from Friday. So I don't know that it always makes sense. And so what makes sense to me is locking in profit.
What's your final word for the day? We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Well, I still believe we need to get from point A to point B, point A being where we're at right now price-wise and expected bushels, and get an idea there. Then point B would be where you need to be on covering expenses and paying yourself for farming this next year. And that's going to be the challenge. And above all, I hate giving up total ownership at some lower levels here as we move into this fall.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
I'd have to agree with Kurt. I think that the one thing is we need to have cash flow to keep these farmers going, and I think we need to agree with the part about with Matt that we need to put some bottoms under these things. So maybe a little money on some puts on these on some of the crop, and then selling some of the cash and replacing with calls on some of the other that's too much out there. But I do think we're going to have a chance to sell corn at a little better level than this.
And Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
I agree with these guys. I think, you know, the thing that we have to do is look at what our situation is. And if our profitability is such we can make money, we need to be locking some of it in on the one side of it. And then, you know, if we are still friendly and we do have to generate cash, like all of us are saying, I think it makes good sense to maybe not get too wrapped up in paying too much in storage costs this year and maybe put together a strategy like we were talking before that's cheaper yet and gives you an opportunity to participate while you get the cash in hand.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always listen to the whole of our program online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.